Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Dark Hearts.
That was a good one.
Were you a little distracted still writing in your planner?
A little, but you know what? It's fine. I'm just trying to be organized for once in my life, so we'll see how long this lasts, but you know.
I'm attempting the same thing, but yeah, that's not a strong suit for me. That's something I really have to work and focus on, so always a fun time.
Agreed.
Thanks for joining us yet again, you guys. We're still well into spooky season. We've had a few people share in messages some of their spooky decor. I love it. I went to Target this weekend with the fam and just to get an idea for like what the kids might want to be for Halloween, because Target Circle always does like the half off. So I wait. Yeah. My daughter, of course, wants literally everything because she's super into dress up. And I'm not going to lie, so many of the princess dresses they have now are super fun that they have in the costume because they light up. Did you see that they have like lights?
Yes. I wanted the Raya one. Did you see that with the cute hat?
Yeah.
I wanted all of them when I was there.
She wanted that one as well. She also wanted Pikachu and Eevee. Never mind that she was Eevee a few years ago.
Is that a Pikachu thing?
That's a Pokemon.
Yeah, same thing. Get Pikachu, with it, whatever. Nerd alert. Just kidding. I just don't know the things.
Yeah. No, my son was torn between Spider-Man and they have a Halo costume, which I didn't know Halo was really still a thing because that was from like our day.
I know.
My husband was like, if you don't know what it is, you can't dress up as it.
That's fair. He has a very good point because, yeah, my daughter will see things she thinks looks cool. And I'm like, you don't even know what that is. Why would you want that as the costume? No. Yeah. Educate yourself.
I mean, it was like, I get it. I think it's just because it looked like kind of like an army thing with the full mask. And I think honestly, he just wanted the sword that went with it.
Yeah.
Because it was huge and awesome. So really, I think that's the only reason. So I think Spider-Man is his thing. Who knows? My daughter, she's into princesses and stuff right now, which is cool. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I have some old princess costumes that will not fit my daughter if you would like to have a gander through those. So
That would be fantastic. She just likes to wear them to dress up. She has a Cinderella one, but my husband complains because it gets glitter everywhere.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We have one of those here too. I won't give you that one. We have like a Jasmine and a Belle.
Oh, fun. And they had, that she was just it. Even them. The Jasmine one, they had all the Disney princesses. They had Jasmine and even hers lit up. They had a Little Mermaid one that was super cool.
Oh, so we have that too, if you want that. And the wig too.
Oh, fun. See, so I told my mom, I was like, okay, you talked about getting her dress up clothes for Christmas. So I'll let you know when these are half off. So maybe you can get a couple of them at least for the price of one.
That's a great
idea. So we'll see.
Well, yes. That's fun. Our Target that we went to did not have a ton out yet. Like, they had the names of all the things that it was going to be, but nothing was there yet. I was kind of surprised. I'm like, that's not that
see,
far
we
out.
We went to the one, actually, we were at the one, the 168th one.
Yeah, that's the one I was at.
They had, when we went Sunday afternoon, it was like all the like little girl stuff, but then like my son's size, there was a few things and like nothing yet. So, because he wants to be Spider-Man and there was no Spider-Man costume yet. So I was like, okay, I'm sure it will be because No Way Home wasn't that long ago. Like, Spider-Man's still popular.
It's still a new, I feel like Spider-Man's always relevant.
They actually had Spider-Gwen costume. Did you ever watch? Okay, I'm about to get nerdy. Okay, but like, if you haven't, I highly recommend to anyone, even if you're not super into it, especially the animated, but the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with Miles Morales Spider-Man is, oh my god, it's amazing.
Is that like new or no?
It came out a few years ago. The sequel was actually supposed to come out this year, but I think it got postponed now.
It's a cartoon one. Is it on Netflix? Yeah.
I don't think it is.
I think
I'll have to see where it is now.
Maybe we've watched it.
It was at one point. It's so good. It's amazing. Like, adult and kids can love it.
Does it have like modern day music? I was gonna start singing the song that I was thinking of. Okay,
it's got I think Wiz Khalifa.
Yes, that one. Okay. Uh-huh. I can't think of the words, but you know what I mean. Okay, then yes, I have seen that actually, Cassie. That's amazing. I've seen that one. My daughter used to love that. Actually,
I love that. I love that song too. I think for copyright reasons, we can't play it, but I actually have it on my phone because I was obsessed with that one.
A 2-second thing, maybe, you know? I don't know how that works actually, but
yeah,
someone will be mean about it. And
it was so good.
That is a good one. So that's where we're at with Halloween costumes. I think we know what we're going to be over on this, in this household, but I don't want to share yet because I don't want to commit to it in case we change our mind. So,
I mean, I've already started getting all of mine, so
yeah,
I'm ready for it.
It's only a month
you
out.
Had an announcement about a listener of ours that
yes, I did. Funny story. So one of my daughter's best friends, she's just the cutest and she's hilarious. She always is like, "You're so famous. You have a podcast." And I'm like, "You know what? I'm keeping you around. You definitely keep the ego boosted." And so, you know, she wanted one of the stickers of ours that she saw that I had. So I gave it to her and she always said she'd listen to it. And I was like, "I bet you really don't, but whatever." So her mom the other day sent me a text and I thought this was hilarious because she said they were driving out of town for a sports tournament and they decided to listen to our podcast. She goes, "As we're listening, it's the episode where you and Cassie were talking about how you would never let your kids listen to your own podcast. As my daughter is listening," she said, "Mom, fail." And it made me laugh because I was like, no judgment.
No judgment whatsoever.
No, she said,
"Every kid's different."
Yeah. And she said, "However, she did say she's never going to drink because she doesn't want something bad to happen at a party." And I said, "See, lessons learned." So
yes,
there you go. So Ruby, I can say your name, your first name. I talked about this with my daughter last night that I was going to say her name. She's like, "Mom, there's so many kids with that name. It's fine." Which, yeah, Ruby, you're my number one fan and you better keep listening and keep advertising because you got to stay Heartland kind.
Listen, we appreciate it. Again, no judgment. I just know my kids. Yeah. Listen, I don't need my daughter getting ideas on how to murder me in my sleep.
Right. And I was like,
my son's just way too sensitive for it.
Yeah. He can't. Well, and that's the thing. I'm like, I'm sure my kid watches movies that other parents would be like mortified that I let my kid watch. So I was like, you know, teach their own. You know your kid better than anyone else. So like,
exactly.
You know what's going to affect them. And
yeah, I know people who's like 5 and 6 year olds are super into horror movies. And I'm like watching like It and like Halloween and stuff. And like my kid could never handle that. Like that's not.
No.
I don't want to deal with the nightmares. Okay.
Yeah. The aftermath. Like, cool. It doesn't seem scary in the moment until afterwards. Because my daughter will always say, "What's the case about this week?" So I give her a very, very like sugar-coated version.
Yeah.
You know, but it has made her more alert to things. Like when we're leaving Target, she's like, "Mom, let me carry the birdie," you know, the alarm thing. And like, it's just, I mean, we always talk about those things. Like what would happen if someone took me while you were getting in the car, what would you do? And so like, I hate that you have to have those conversations this day and age, but like, that's the world that we live in and you can't really ever be too safe. So
no. And I will say though, one thing that I sent you the article last night, and I was talking to my friend Lacey about it too, that gives me, it gives me some hope too. So there's that article about, there's a teacher on leave. I can't remember where it was.
Rhode Island
or something.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I just pulled it up.
Because, these boys, it sounded like it was just boys. People had complained about this teacher making inappropriate remarks and stuff like that to the girls. Mm-hmm. And faculty didn't take them seriously. So they started a Discord chat called like the pedometer or something like that.
Pedo database.
Yes. And they marked any time he said or did anything inappropriate towards girls. And they were just like, we felt like, they're like, "We felt like we needed this just in case. Like, what if this was ever needed for evidence?" And they didn't necessarily think they were serious. But it has been now. Some stuff came out and then the boy came forward with this. And like, the thing is this teacher had said himself he'd been complained about so many times, but nothing had ever happened. So we need to be raising our boys like this.
Yeah, the fact that it's boys doing it for girls is
and
crazy.
Recognizing the problematic behavior and not like
condoning it.
Into it. Yes. And I'm like, that gives me hope for as my daughter gets older, you know, if we have more children being raised in this way to call out these things and to still continue to like do something about it, even if an adult doesn't listen to them. Like, I just think that is phenomenal. So good on you parents who've raised these boys in this manner. Like, that's what we need more of in this world. And so that gave me some hope. And I was like, thank you. Thank you, universe, for showing me this.
It's refreshing to hear like a good story, given it's bad. Yes. I mean, ultimately, but like,
I mean, being I didn't see anything. Yeah, I didn't see anything about
other than like
any sexual assaults happening.
Yeah, it was like him, you know, calling him sweetheart and honey,
and making them dance and like making inappropriate remarks and stuff. And so, like, you know, it's still an ongoing investigation. Unfortunately, maybe something. It did mention something about him stalking one of his middle schoolers that he coached or something. Yeah. So I don't know. So that's you know, our little chatty beginning. Yeah. For those of you who don't enjoy that, maybe fast forwarded now, and hopefully here.
Yeah.
You like to have a conversation with us.
Be a jerk and give us a bad star because you don't like that. You can just fast forward it. Okay. Thanks.
Or don't listen to us. I mean, there's that too. Like, we've never said that we weren't chatty people.
You know, Nebraska's slogan is Nebraska, we're not for everyone, or it's not for everyone, or whatever.
And yeah, here you go. I'm not going to lie. I know people hate that slogan, but I kind of love it because it's 1,000% true. I don't know who it's really for. I live here. It's not for me either, but this is where I am. So
here we are, you know? So if it's not for you, then that's fine. You can.
I mean, there are things about Nebraska I do enjoy. Not a lot.
Yeah, overall, it could be so much worse good scenery. When you hear about all the other things that happen in other places. So
I do enjoy our lack of traffic. If the most it's going to take me is 30 minutes to get somewhere because of rush hour traffic, I'm not mad about it.
I know
what some other places are like.
Seriously, it's not bad at all. You can get from one side of the city to the other. Yeah, in like 30 minutes max, I feel like. Yeah. Even on a busy day.
Exactly. It's not bad at all. And growing up in a small town where it took me at least 30 minutes to even get anywhere.
Yeah.
30 minutes is nothing to me.
Nah.
All right. So let's jump in to this week's case. First of all, I am going to give a trigger warning throughout this. There is some sexual assault talk. Obviously, there is some murder in this week's episode. Some other gross things. I don't know how to trigger warn. It's just not gross. It's just gross. Feces is involved.
Oh, don't like really it. Gross. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of our listeners have at least heard of, maybe some of you have watched the new Netflix show, Devil in Ohio.
Yes. Have you watched it yet, Cassie?
No, I haven't. Listen, I have so many things to start and I can't keep up with anything. Oh my God, I just realized, isn't today, when we're recording, it's Tuesday, The Patient. There should be a new episode, right?
Oh, I watched it already today.
Oh, snap. I can't believe you
didn't say anything. I had it on while I was working because it was like so short and
they always are.
Okay. It was good, but they're never long enough, so.
No, they're not. See, look, this is why I need to be medicated. I'm like, squirrel. Okay, yeah, so anyways, Netflix show. I haven't watched it yet. I had another friend mention it and I looked it up and then I came across an article that was like, this show is based off of a book, which is loosely based off an actual cult in Ohio.
Oh, is this your case? Is
yes.
The one? Oh my gosh. Okay. So it'll be somewhat like not, obviously this is a very like loosely based show,
that's
a great idea.
I kind of thought that this was like, this is kind of perfect timing. This show just came out. I was just hearing about this. I haven't watched it yet. It's on my ever growing list of things to watch. But yeah, so I will say off the bat, no, I haven't watched the Netflix show. Not that you have to have seen
it. It was okay. I mean, I can give you my thoughts at the very end of what I felt, but
it's okay. I did watch an episode of Deadly Cults, which I tell you what, I searched all over the place. Amazon has some of them. Apple TV had some of them, but they never had the actual episode I needed. So what I had to do was season one, episode two. I had to use the USA app. And I had to put in my email to get 2 free coins or credits or whatever so I could watch for free.
Yeah,
I was like, whatever. So I watched it because I do think that those Deadly Cults is interesting because they talk to actual members and stuff like that. And then I did listen to, there was actually quite a few, I hadn't heard of this cult before. I'm sure plenty of others have. There are several podcasts out there. The one I listened to was The Cults podcast on Parcast, which I listened to for other ones as well, like the Rulo Nebraska one and stuff too. I think they do a really good job. They do have a two-parter for this. It's just called like Kirtland Cult, Jeffrey Lundgren. And I will say, like, if you're interested in this, you want more, like, especially like on the psychological side of things, like they're a good one to listen to because I'm not going to go into, I tell you what, like I wrote out a bunch of notes. So I was like, I'm not going to put all of this, but I want to have it. I was like, I don't want to go as into detail, but I still have so many notes. I was like, this is longer than I thought it was going to be.
It's too complicated.
Yeah. And it's one of those things. So like, I'm going to kind of give a backstory about Jeffrey and stuff like that. It's like, I feel like you kind of have to just see this timeline of how we get to where we are.
Sure.
I'm like, I don't want to give him all of these things, but in this, like, there are victims in this. There's a family that is murdered in this. And I'm not saying, like, I don't know. It's just so interesting to see how we got to this point and how these people got here. And I still leave a bunch out and I, like, shorten up and summarize a lot of stuff. So I do highly recommend that if you wanted to get into more of the finer details of things, especially because, like, about, like, the RLDS church is involved. And if you want to know more about the church itself, they go into all of that. So that's what we're, that's what we're talking about today, you guys.
I'm kind of excited now that I watched that show.
You know, so even though main events of everything happens in Kirtland, which is with a T. I thought it was Kirkland at first, but it's Kirtland.
Okay. Kirtland.
Yeah.
Okay.
She'll be in the podcast information. But Jeffrey was actually from Independence, Missouri. So we're still in the heartland.
Heck yeah.
And by all accounts, he lived in a toxic and abusive household. Like, his mom was a narcissist and, like, would use, she weaponized her love. You know, one of those things, like,
oh yeah,
used it as a reward. But if you were not doing what was right, you were punished by her being cold. And
you can see where it all begins here with the
pattern. And Jeff clearly, I mean, you can tell, like, he's got a lot of mommy and daddy issues and he's a narcissist himself. Which cult leaders usually tend to be. They end up being charming, charismatic, and narcissists. And his dad was just one of those stereotypical toxic masculinity men. Like, you had to be a manly man and all these things. And Jeff, I guess, was kind of scrawny in the beginning, you know, in high school and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he just wasn't ever good enough for his dad. And then, I don't know, his junior or senior year, he bulked up, played some sports or some shit, and got a little popular. But they were also part of the RLDS Church, which stands for the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is an offshoot of Mormonism. And I think it has something to do, I think how they got to the reorganized part was something to do with, like, when the original prophet Joseph Smith died, and, like, some believed in following his son and some believed in following this other dude.
Yeah.
Listen,
they talk about that on the show a little bit. So that kind of, if anyone's watched that, then they can probably see or understand that a little.
Yeah. So I'm sorry if we have any listeners who are within this religious frame. I'm not trying to be disrespectful or anything like that. You'll get a lot. There was just so much information.
Yeah, you're just given the facts of what you could find, what you found. So
yes. But I needed to give a little bit of this because, you know, it's also one of those things, like, Lundgren's cult was definitely not RLDS teachings. So I don't want to go too into the church stuff either, because I don't want people to, like, get confused then and think that this was, like, an extreme church thing. This was just a man taking his ideas way too extreme. So anyways, so Jeff then goes to college in Missouri called Central Missouri State University. He first meets his future wife, Alice, there. She was actually just visiting a friend. She was a senior in high school, but she does go to school there then. And they spend a lot of time. So this school wasn't, like, a religious school, but they had, like, a building there for all RLDS youth to congregate at. So that's one of the areas where he met his future wife, Alice Keeler, and a future follower, Keith Johnson, who we don't hear about again until much later. But this is where him and Keith kind of meet. So, like, some things talk about how Alice was also abused by her dad and stuff, and they bonded over this. But, like, in the Cults podcast, they also talk about how she was the youngest and she was, like, super spoiled. And her sister talked about how she just lied a lot and she didn't think she knew the truth from fiction. She just had to be the center of attention, which, I mean, being spoiled doesn't mean she wasn't also abused. I have no idea.
Right.
But they bonded. And the thing is like, Jeff's family was rich. Alice's family was not. But they started dating, even though Jeff knew his family would never approve of Alice. And it sounds like by all accounts, they quickly became enamored with each other. Like within the week, they were spending every moment together, missing classes. And it sounds like he even started to control what Alice was wearing and like would walk her to class and then just like stare at her in class. And she didn't think
that's
this was red flag.
At all.
Right. Other people were like, red flags. And she's like, oh no, this just shows how much he loves me. And also she was part of, she was also part of this RLDS church. And she was kind of brought up along the lines of like, a woman is meant to serve her husband and these types of things. And so like for her, she was like, this is going to be my future husband. So I'm going to show him.
Yeah.
Like I know how to be a good wife.
She probably liked the attention a little bit too. Just
100%. Given, that's the other thing. Yeah, she loved having attention. So yeah. Having someone who's like so enamored with her that he's following her around. She's like, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So like pretty quickly he proposes to her again, despite knowing that his family is not going to approve. And the reason why it matters whether or not his family approves is because in Missouri at this time, even being 19, he would still need parental approval to get married. Hmm. And he knew they wouldn't give
it
to him.
What year was this? Sorry, or what this was, time frame,
no,
I guess.
You're
I
good.
Don't remember.
This was like late 1960s.
Oh, okay.
Like 1970. Because they get married in 1970. Yeah. So okay. This all happens pretty quick.
Yeah.
So it's probably like late 1969, early 1970.
Okay.
So they're engaged and Jeffrey pressures her into having sex with him, even though they're not married, which is against their religion to have sex before marriage. But
I'm surprised
she wants
he
to
even
prove.
Was okay with that. If he's that devout, but you know, it's okay.
Well, and I guess at this point he's kind of not as devout anymore. Like, he's iffy and he still plays the part, but he's not as into it as he will be later. So she wants to prove that she loves him. So even though she feels shame and guilt, she has sex with him. And, you know, when they go back to talk to his family, of course they don't approve, except then they find out, oops, Alice is pregnant.
Oh, well, you can't hide that.
So they have to get married and pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Before Alice starts showing, so you know you can kind of pretend,
That'll solve all the problems.
Yeah.
Get married.
Yeah. So they were married in 1970 at the ages of 18 and 19. And then so I'm not exactly sure when in 1970 they got married, but then by December of 1970, Alice gave birth to their first child, Damon. So then at this point, the Vietnam War is going on.
Okay.
And they have the draft and everything like that. Oh, but I guess they had this delayed draft thing that if you enlisted, it would be delayed on when you had to go in and stuff. So Jeffrey enlisted in the Navy. But like, I don't know. Like, so he would delay and hopefully like miss out on getting called to Vietnam. But then he has to go to boot camp and all this. And then he does end up going to Vietnam.
Oh.
And his ship gets attacked. But everyone on it is fine and survives. And this is when we start to see Jeffrey's narcissism really shine through. And his faith start to take... Because he took this as... Because he had been praying, I guess, for a sign from God. And then this happened. And he took it as, everyone is fine because God wanted me to be fine. So I'm the reason why everyone on this ship is fine.
Thank you so much for being on that ship.
Uh-huh. Or maybe they wouldn't have even been attacked if you hadn't been on that ship and asked for a sign.
Maybe the sign was, they were trying to get rid of you and wash you away.
You know, that would have avoided so many issues.
Yeah.
So, he took that as God wanted him around and he was meant to do great things.
Mm-hmm.
So he returns home in 1973. And I think Alice was like living with her parents at this point. They go back and forth all over the place because they are bad with money and always losing a home. So it's hard to keep up. But at this point, again, we see that he's super controlling. He won't even let her make phone calls without his approval. And she talks about how he was obsessed with sex and only cared about satisfying himself, which... Yeah, narcissist. So then by 1974, Alice was pregnant again. And by 1975, their second son, Jacob, was born. And at this point, these two are very much in debt. And I think at this point, he had gotten discharged. Jeff had gotten discharged from the Navy, like an honorable discharge. Not sure why, but he was no longer in it. Hmm. And so Jeff's in total control of their finances, right? Because he's the man and he has to have control over everything. But he blamed Alice for their debt, saying she was just like his mother. She needed to be showy and materialistic. And they were having marital problems. So he's like, she has to have material items as just signs of my love for her. And everyone says they were both very much at fault. They couldn't handle money. Jeff, it sounds like, always was in and out of jobs. Like, he could not hold a job. So by 1975, they had $44,500 worth of debt. Jeez. Which the Colts mentioned in their episode was around $180,000 today in debt.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And it's also worth noting that, like I said, Alice didn't work and Jeffrey didn't hold a job. Like, I think he felt like he was above working, was one of those things. And then Jeffrey at this point decides to, because, you know, they're part of the RLDS church still. He feels like he's God's gift to the world now. So he's like, I want to be in the priesthood. I want to join the priesthood. So he puts his name forth to the elders. And this is like in 1975. Don't know how long this goes about taking, but I guess by 1977, he was denied the priesthood. And they stated emotional immaturity as the reason for declining his request, which I'm like, yeah.
You're not wrong.
Right. I mean, at this point, he's only like 26, too. And I'm...
Yeah. Oh, gosh. That's like super young. And generally, mm-hmm. positions like that, they want more like, you know, people who have more life experience and are older, but
I mean, I don't know, so many things there. So of course he's angry. He also got fired from yet another job. And then he started to lie to Alice about having a job. And it sounds like he would maybe like, cause she mentioned things going missing from the house and how he was coming home at different hours and stuff like that. So it sounds like he was probably pawning stuff.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And still writing checks too, because he ends up getting arrested, sometime in 1979, for writing a bad check to buy a gun because he was trying to collect guns because that's what his dad did. So he had to be just like his dad, seeking that approval. So I don't know if he served time for this. If he did, it was minimal. But I do know that Alice also had their third child in 1979, oh. which was a daughter named Kristen. And so this is something, and like, maybe this is something I can leave out, but like, I don't know. I was like disturbed. Like, I was like making a disgusted face as I was listening to this. I was like, now other people have to hear
it. Now I have to hear it. Yeah.
So it's also mentioned in the Cults podcast that Jeffrey had something called coprophilia, which is an abnormal interest in feces and defecation.
Gross.
Yeah.
In what way? I mean, gross, regardless, let's be honest.
So but, Alice mentions how he had asked her to do a lot of sexual things that she was uncomfortable with, one of which was defecating on him, maybe him defecating on her during sex. Sounds like he was into some sadomasochist things on the BDSM side of things. Yeah. So... Mm-hmm. At this point then, too, after they've had their other daughter and Jeff's asking for these things and Alice isn't really feeling it, I don't know if she didn't give in at first and then later she does, because then it talks about how she did do some of these things with him.
Gross.
But he's been like working...
unsanitary.
I mean, there are some... Listen.
There's a lot of things wrong there, but, you know. There's a lot of things. You know.
I don't like to yuck someone else's yum.
But that's like, it's okay in that...
There's disease in that.
Yeah, that's just not even... No.
So many horrible things could come of that. So around, I think it's like 1980s at this point, like early 1980. Jeff is working in a hospital. I'm not sure, like a custodial job at a hospital. And he has an affair with a coworker, which it sounds like this lady liked to have lots of affairs with lots of people at the job. Mm. So Alice finds out about it and they fight. And he threw her so hard into a door that it ruptured her spleen.
Holy shit.
So while she's on bed rest and recovering from this and on pain meds, Jeffrey raped Alice. And now on the podcast, they're like, he had sex with her. But they even mention how she was like barely conscious. Like, that's not sex, that's rape. Because if she's so drunked up on pain meds that she's barely conscious, there's no consent that she could have given.
And has and no this recollection. Gets her pregnant. And yeah. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Wow. So many things wrong right there.
Yeah. Exactly. So now they have their fourth son, Caleb, in September of 1980.
So they have four kids and now? Then, or five?
Yes. Four. It's Damon.
Oh, okay. Two boys, a Jacob, girl, and then a boy?
Kristen. Yes. And then Caleb.
Okay. Jeez, that's a lot of kids in a short amount of time.
Yes, it is. So, I mean, within a 10-year frame, I guess.
I mean, but... I guess. I'm just, yeah. I feel bad for her. Well, and especially just knowing the whole situation and the money and the, yeah, like, how does he treat those kids? I'm sure you're getting into that. So I'll let you carry on.
Yeah. So Jeff gets fired yet again because he got caught having sex with this other woman in the office at work. So mind you, his wife has had a baby.
Gross.
All these things.
Sounds like a really good, great guy.
Yep. And so they had been renting a farmhouse at this point, and they get kicked out because they're not paying rent. So the landlord goes to check on the home, and he finds the things he had kept in storage in the garage were stolen, and a sewage pipe in the basement had been cut, and so everything from the upstairs toilet was just falling to the floor in the basement.
Sick.
He said there was a pile of human excrement that was about a foot deep and 6 inches in diameter. And he also mentioned finding sadomasochist porn magazines and a dildo covered in feces in the closet in the basement.
And sick.
I don't even want to speculate what was going on with that.
No, no.
I think we, cults, even in cults, they were even like, we don't know what was going on with that, but even if we did, we wouldn't say. I was like,
no. You, all, that's all you had to say, and it's kind of like, you just get your thoughts there and sick. Mm.
Yeah. So I'm like, how much damage? And then it's like, so did he do that before to like help with his coprophilia, or did he?
Right.
Did he do this as a thing because he was mad that they got evicted? Right.
Like a peace out gift type thing.
Yeah.
Did they just forget that was there?
But with that much of foot deep, that had to have been for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
So then by 1982, Jeff and Alice are living off of a church fund that is meant to support poor Mormon families. And when a friend asked Alice, like, why Jeff didn't work, because he's like 30, 33 at this point, she said that he was supposed to do great things and so others should support him, which then in turn means supporting her too, because she also didn't work.
And the kids. It's brainwashed. She's clearly just, brainwashed.
Well, and it's, so then another couple, I can't remember their name. The guy's name was Jim, I think. But they end up like financially supporting them, even though they are also getting this fund and they don't need it. But like Jim had cancer, and they go to the Kirtland Temple together, and pretty much Jeff claims to have cured Jim's cancer because Jim goes into remission. Hey Dark Hearts, just wanted to take a moment to tell you about She's Birdie. What this is a small device that can give you a little bit of peace of mind whether you're out walking, working late, or whatever it might be. The Birdie is a small device that can easily be on your keychain, your belt loop, your purse, or held in your hand. The original Birdie is just a loud alarm with a flashing light to help draw attention to you if you're feeling uncomfortable or you're in a situation where you need help or attention. Now they offer the Birdie Plus. Same device, except it doesn't have the flashing light, Instead, it comes with an app that gives you 24/7 access to live representatives who can talk with you while you're walking to your car or wherever you might be you feel uncomfortable, or they can even send first responders to your location, as well as sharing your GPS location with two emergency contacts and giving you an excuse call if you're in a situation where you feel uncomfortable and aren't sure how to get away. Now, what's nice about the Birdies is that it's something that you can use discreetly to call the live representatives. You just press the buttons twice. If you want an excuse call, you just tap it once and you'll get an automated call that'll help give you an excuse to get away from whatever situation you're in. Now, if you hold the button, this is what sends your location to your two emergency contacts. The original Birdie is $29.95 and the Birdie Plus is $39.95, and then you do need a subscription with that, which is $8.99 a month, or you can do the annual subscription of $89.99, saving you 20%. But if you use our code DARKHEARTS15, you'll get 15% off your Birdie as well. This is something that we love, we have for ourselves as well, just with the type of stuff that we're into, the true crime. We're clearly more aware of our surroundings. We are a little more cautious at times, and this can just give us a peace of mind. It's also great if you have teenagers who are out now, working later, school activities, to give you peace of mind about their safety as well. So again, their site is SHESBIRDIE.com, and if you use our code DARKHEARTS15, you'll get 15% off your order today. So stay Heartland kind, but Darkland wary, and have that Birdie with you to make sure you stay safe. But Jim says, like, he was at the church, he was praying, and then he felt ill, and he went home, and then he found out I was in remission, like... I think Jim kind of felt like maybe this was God healing him, but he didn't think Jeff healed him. Eventually, it'll get to the point where he's so uncomfortable with Jeff telling the whole congregation this that he's like, yeah, we're not going to support you financially anymore.
Yeah, that's weird.
But they support him for a while, it sounds like. So by 1983, Jeff was finally ordained and held his first... and last sermon. It was on God punishing the wicked, and so many people complained about how violent the passages were that he was not asked to give another sermon.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe, and then shortly after,
tested that out, did a dress rehearsal there.
Yeah, dry run maybe. Yeah.
Test run, yeah, there you go.
So, yikes. So then their son Damon, he fell and broke a rib, which punctured his liver. And Alice wanted to stay at the hospital with their child, as a mom would. And Jeff became so enraged because she was not paying enough attention to him that he raped her. Although, since he thought women only existed to serve their husbands, he didn't look at it as rape. She was fulfilling her wifely duties.
Oh, is that what that was? Sick.
Uh-huh. Alice didn't feel the same way, though, and so she threatened divorce. So Jeff was like...
Ooh, I'd be scared.
Jeff all of a sudden is like, oh my goodness, I had a vision from God. And I don't remember what it was. At this point, I feel like he's had a few visions that they've talked about. God said he was special, pretty much, you know? And so Alice is like, well, I can't leave you now. God said you're gonna do good things.
She's just stupid, too, but whatever.
Listen, she's problematic as well, and she'll try to, which I'm not saying she wasn't a victim, but she was also definitely part of this. Like, they talk about cults, so she was probably a bit of a narcissist as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, in April of 1984, the RLDS Church holds a summit and votes to allow women into the priesthood. And this enrages Jeff, because, you know, he's a misogynist.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, he's not the only one who's not okay with this. This actually kind of creates a divide within the church, the RLDS church, because there are the more liberal followers who wanted this. And then there's the fundamentalists like Jeff who think it should all still be the same. So Jeff had been teaching a Bible class for adults at the church where he did spew more fundamentalist views. So some of the adults who attended this class were actually Dennis and Cheryl Avery. And everything I watched or listened to mentioned how these people were not very well liked, and no reason given sounded legitimate. Every reason anyone gave sounded like petty high school bullying BS. You know, members of the congregation just thought they were too mousy and meek and annoying. They tried too hard, you know, no one liked them. And Jeff felt the same way about them, but like, especially Cheryl. Cheryl felt like Jeff was just this amazing person, and they agreed with his views on the fundamentalist RLDS beliefs, and they were some of his first followers. Eventually, his Bible classes discontinued at the church because of his more radical teachings, and he takes the Bible study to his home. And then he eventually says that God told him to go to Ohio. And Alice then sees that there's a volunteer position at the Kirtland Temple for a tour guide. Now, this is unpaid.
Oh, gosh.
He doesn't work already. I don't know right. how they survive. Well, you know, they're living off of the church. So,
yeah, what's the difference there? But, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's unpaid, but they do provide housing. So, in August of 1984, they moved to Kirtland, Ohio, into a home across the street from the church. And Jeff impresses the higher-ups pretty quickly, and they put him in charge of the church's financials, like, right away.
Oh, that sounds really smart when he's not even working and hasn't worked, but okay.
They'll discover in a few years what a mistake
that I'm sure. Yeah, clearly it's stupid to begin with. Maybe look into things more, people, but yes, okay.
You know.
He can sell himself good, so.
He can. He's very charismatic.
Sorry, it's like lagging.
No, I noticed that too.
So I'm sorry.
So 1985, he's in charge of that. Okay, so then he's asked to lead an adult Sunday school class. And this is when he starts to tell people in his class that he invented something called chiasmus reading of the Bible, which he didn't. But it's a specific way of reading the Bible, and it's based on the belief that mankind is created in God's mirror image. So one should look for Bible verses that mirror each other, and then whatever is between those two mirrored lines is the truth. And they gave an example in the Cults podcast. It was like, I don't know, some verse, and it started with like, above thy sky, and then above thy sky or something. So everything in between, or the sky above. So then those mirrored each other. So everything in between is the truth in the word of God, and everything else men wrote is what the belief is. And he became so fixated on this that he started to cross out everything in the Bible that wasn't between mirrored verses.
Okay.
Which is a good way to, like, get the Bible to say what you want it to say, too.
Correct. Yeah. Easy.
So by 1986, Jeff has convinced his first followers in Ohio, which the Avery stayed behind at first, So his followers then in Ohio, he convinces them to support him financially. And these people were Kevin Curry, who had been a battle buddy from the Navy. Sharon, and I don't remember her last, it was something with a B, and it was really, like, it was Long Blanchard or something like that. Denny Kraft, Richard Brand, and Char Olson. And Jeff was well-respected in the church by other fundamentalist RLDS members. And, I mean, it is worth noting that while they liked him, not all of them joined his cult. The more liberal members stood by the reverend of the temple, who was Dale Luffman, and he was one who believed women should be able to be allowed in the priesthood. And Jeff despised him for this. He would openly badmouth him at his Sunday school classes, but Luffman couldn't punish him because so many of the fundamentalist members of the church respected him. So that's where then, you know, by 1987, Joel's cult was pretty much in full swing. He got other people to join in, such as Dennis and Tanya Patrick, Greg Winship, and then at this point, the Averys had sold their home and moved them and their three daughters to Ohio as well. And Jeff still hated them, especially because Dennis often deferred to his wife to make decisions. And remember, Jeff is clearly a misogynist as well and feels like it's the wife's job to do whatever the husband says. So he hates this. But one of the followers, Richard Olson, said he once overheard Jeff tell his wife, Alice, that the Averys were only there so he could take their money. So he knew what he was doing. He knew no one liked them, and so that they respected him so much, and they were going to do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
And he hated them, but he took advantage of that.
Yeah, use them, apparently. Just do what you got to do.
As all of his members, because then we find out, so he was teaching his private classes in the home to his followers, which included his 16-year-old son, Damon, who was the oldest. And all of his followers at this point either lived with the Lundgren family or nearby. And every single one of them gave him all of their paychecks and things like that. And he was supposedly paying all of their bills, like rent and car payments. And they also called him Dad.
Okay, that's not creepy at all.
Yeah.
No.
Then, like many cult leaders like to do, he decided to play matchmaker and said that he read everyone's true partner's name in the Bible. One of the first people to be paired were Richard, Brand, and Sharon. And she was happy with it, but Richard wasn't because he didn't think she was attractive enough.
Okay, buddy.
Yeah. But, I mean, Jeff basically was like, tough shit. It's God's will. So... do it or else. So Richard went along with it. Then in continued cult leader fashion, he talks about how the apocalypse will happen soon and they'll have to defend the temple by any means necessary, which means they're probably going to have to kill people. And then they're going to have to live off the land. So they start to stockpile guns and survivalist gear, like camping equipment, food, like that kind of stuff. And now, during all this, he is still teaching his Bible study at the church, but then his followers got the more extreme teachings that the Bible study at his home. Then, in July of 1987, 2 years later, after they put him in charge of finances, the church leaders decide to audit their finances and found $20,000 missing.
Weird.
And they knew the only person who could have taken it was Jeff, but since they had no actual evidence, they couldn't press charges. Wow. So instead, they just let him leave quietly, and then they kicked him out of the church-owned home.
And they just said bye to their 20 grand or whatever it was?
I guess. Yeah.
Okay, bye. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, and I mean, in true narcissist fashion, of course, he doesn't accept responsibility. Instead, he decided that this was a sign that they should create a commune. So they rent this farm with a barn and everything, and everyone except for the Patricks, the Averys, and the Luffs lived there. So these three other families lived nearby and still continue to give all of their money to Jeff. And then some other members, Shar and Denny, are now matched up. You know, he just continues throughout this to like start to pair people up. Yeah. And Jeff continued with his nightly classes, which lasted from 2 to 3 hours, and everyone had to attend except the Averys, because again, Jeff hated them.
Yeah. And was this known to the Averys? I mean,
I think it's, I wonder one of those, if they were things,
like, oblivious to that.
I think it's one of those things where like they probably have a general, like, they know but they don't want to know, so they just are clueless. And like other people in like deadly cults talk about how like they were actually nice people, but because Jeff didn't like them, no one really treated them well.
That sucks for them. Not like they're probably stand-up people, but you know.
Right. So then one of the things Jeff started to teach his followers was a new meaning to a Bible passage called the Parable of the Vineyard, which in this, it, the actual meaning for them is, it's comparing the work of pruning an olive tree to that of the difficult task of atonement. But Jeff decided it actually meant that the Kirtland Temple was the vineyard and that Jeff needed to, quote unquote, prune the wicked from it, which was getting rid of the reverend and the other members of the RLDS church who lived in the church homes and anyone within a one block radius of this.
Dang.
He told his followers that God was telling him to take over the temple and it would be the start of the apocalypse. Except the Averys weren't told about this whole plan.
Of course
and
they weren't.
And he said they'd be on their own. Nope, because he said they'd be on their own during the apocalypse.
Dang.
And then they were to take over the temple on May 3rd of 1988, which coincidentally was Jeff's birthday. He also stated that because Jesus only had 12 disciples, only 12 of them would survive. And I think including the kids, there was around 30 or a little over 30 of his followers at this point. So he's picking and choosing who he wants. Yeah. So this sowed distrust among the members. Like, and it talks about in the show, like at one point, they're eventually not even allowed to talk to each other. Even like they're sitting beside each other. Like, he did not want them to, which many cult leaders don't, because if you start to talk to your fellow people, you're like,
that's when you find out all the things. Yeah. Is he doing this to you too? Oh, he told me that.
So, Kevin Curry, who was one of the first people to be supporting financially in Ohio here, started to doubt Jeff and his teachings, and he feared him. So on February 17th of 1988, Kevin headed off to work just like normal, but he left his truck parked there and walked to the bus station and left town. And he was so afraid of Jeff, like, coming after him and retaliating, that he didn't even tell his mom where he was going. Like, he up and left.
Good on him, though.
Yeah. And, you know, Kevin, it sounds like he got his shit. He was the first to leave, and we'll kind of talk about him a little bit more here in a minute. But so, Jeff is livid, and at first he wanted to hunt him down and kill him. But then he decided that he would die in the apocalypse, so it was fine. So, then at this point, and they interview her, Jeff's cousin Debbie joins the cult in April of this year, of 1988. She was newly divorced, in a lot of debt. You know, she didn't feel like she could ever be loved again and all these things. And then, you know, she comes here and Jeff is like, hey, Greg Winship is your true partner. Like, you guys are meant to be together. So here she is feeling good about that. And like I said, she was one of the people interviewed in Deadly Cults, and she just talks about how it was nice to just have someone else take care of everything, and she was in a vulnerable place, as were so many of these other people there, and so it was easy for Jeff to manipulate them. So while Kevin's out, he's happy he's out, but he starts to feel guilty knowing what they have planned for the temple. So he contacts an FBI agent to warn them about this takeover, but unfortunately the agent doesn't believe him. He just thinks he's this crazy guy spouting off nonsense. So he sends them to the Kirkland police to deal with. And one of the police is Dennis Yarborough. There are so many Dennises in this episode. Like, that's the other thing that's confusing for me.
That must have been the name of the time.
Yeah. So this officer takes the call and he believes Kevin, because they've actually gotten complaints from neighbors of this farmhouse that they think there's a cult living there. But they have no proof of anything. There's nothing they can do. They haven't done anything. So they kind of stake it out. They try to see if they can catch anything. And Dennis Yarborough actually brings Jeff into the station just to tell him they'd gotten reports of paramilitary around the area and to keep an eye out. And so this was the officer's kind of subtle way of seeing if, one, if Jeff would do anything, but to also let him know, like, hey, we're aware of something. And so they didn't want to completely spook him off, but yeah. So, of course, Jeff can't admit that he was spooked by this. So instead, he tells his followers that God said they couldn't take over the temple because they were unclean. So they'd have to wait a whole year and purify themselves. So now they're not going to do it until May 3rd of 1989. Now, during this time, Char gets a call from a creditor saying that she's behind on her car payments. And she's furious because supposedly she's been handing all of her money over to Jeff and he's supposed to be making these payments. So that's when she realizes that he's been using her money. So she left the cult at the end of May. So she leaves the cult. Eventually she calls this Dennis Yarborough too. And she was like, or one of the police stations. And she was like, hey, I left this cult. I have some other friends that I want you to get out. But she tells him about how he's talking about reaping, you know, sowing and whatever, scything through the temple and killing people. And
so he didn't try to come after her, or did he not know that she was gone? Or do you not know?
They didn't give too much information. It sounds like, I don't know that he tried to come after her, really. I think at this point he was like, whatever.
Yeah. She'll die. And he knew he was too. Like, yeah, she could. He had her money, so what else do you need?
Yeah, well, and I think he's kind of starting to realize he's losing control, and we'll get into that. So it's also around this time that Jeff is excommunicated from the RLDS church. And on the day they excommunicate him, there was actually a double rainbow, which he said was one of the seals of the apocalypse, and he now has 6 months to start breaking the others. And the start of this was sacrificing 5 followers.
Jeez.
And like I said, so he realizes that he's losing control and he has to do something. And Shar was actually one of the people he said was going to be his 12, one of the 12 disciples.
Mm-hmm.
So there's around, I think, 29 members, including the children at this point, 29 to 30. Mm-hmm. And he goes on about how God told him that he needed to obtain power by sacrificing the wicked and that they had to come from Jeff's own flock. Ugh. And in the show, they even mention how he said something about how like 1/3 needed to be sacrificed, 1/3 would have to fight for their place during the apocalypse, and the other 1/3 was guaranteed a place.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's just making shit up. Like, yeah, this sounds good.
Yeah, okay. Like, they talk about, and they go more into, like, one of his visions that he supposedly had about how he's the last prophet of God is literally the plot of The Highlander.
Oh, interesting.
Which he said was because God gave some of those screenwriters, like, a divine message.
Uh-huh.
Because I guess him and his wife loved that movie so much, they went and saw it 7 times the weekend it came out.
That's ironic. Now it all kind of is making more sense then, too.
Yeah. So, you know, so now he's got 6 months to sacrifice, right?
These people.
And This is where, okay, we're going to sacrifice 5 followers. And by March of 1989, everyone's on board with this idea.
Gross.
And two new followers join, which is his friend Keith Johnson, who we talked about he met in college, and his wife, Kathy. I think they maybe had kids as well. I don't know at this point. And he told his followers that after the sacrifice, they'd have to move out to the woods to purify themselves. And then all of a sudden, Jeff is like, you know what? It's not 5. I actually have to sacrifice 10 of my followers. So this, of course, puts everyone on edge, and they're doing whatever they can to please him. Because the thing is everyone knows that the first 5 are more than likely going to be the Averys, because Jeff hates them.
Yeah, get rid of them.
Yeah. And Jeff even hated their daughters. He said they were ill-behaved children, but later everyone says that they were actually really sweet girls.
He just hates them by association, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So on April 10th of 1989, well, and Jeff's a misogynist, so he already is inclined to not
hates
like women.
Any female, yeah.
Yeah. So on April 10th of 1989, I had just turned 1 the day before.
Oh, look at that.
Jeff, Ron Luff, and Keith Johnson dig a hole in the barn for these 10 people who are going to be sacrificed. Ugh. So these men know that they could potentially be digging their own grave.
Mm-hmm.
So then everyone puts in their notice at work, because everyone, they're going to be...
At least they're responsible.
Well, there's a reasoning. So the Averys figured they were moving out to the woods, so that's why they agreed to it, right? But Jeff figured if they weren't expected at work, then they wouldn't be missed and wouldn't be found.
Right.
There was a reasoning behind that. So people wouldn't come looking for them, but especially for the Averys, who he planned to kill.
So they all were just, like, preparing to basically die if they... And to cover
Everyone's hoping it's not them, but yes.
Just in case, I'm going to make sure my job knows not to come look for me, because I'm not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So then the day before the killings, Jeff kind of got cold feet about killing 10 members. Like, everyone disliked the Averys, so that's not a big deal. But if he killed someone the others liked, he could lose control of the group. So he decided...
Right, and he's going to lose followers that way too, right? So it's kind of like you're losing...
I mean, he's literally losing followers by killing them, but yes.
Yeah, like more... I mean, but yeah, you're going to kill off more of your people, so... But probably because he was losing control of a bigger group.
Mm-hmm. So he was like, JK, I only need to sacrifice 5 of you. And that was, Yep, so he decided it would just be the Averys. So the day of the killings was April 17th of 1989, and someone from the group called and made a reservation at, like, the Red Roof Inn for the Lundgren family. So they had an alibi for where they were. And then that night, everyone had dinner together, including the Averys. And afterwards, Alice left for the inn with her 3 youngest kids, which were Jason, Kristen, and Caleb. Jason or Jacob? I don't remember now.
Something close to that.
Yeah. And it was noted, too, in the show that Keith and his wife, Kathy, also left to stay with some other cult members who didn't live at the farm, but that's not mentioned in the podcast. But then later on, when I was looking up, like, charges and stuff, it sounds like it was probably the Patricks.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into that a little bit later, too. So then Jeff has Cheryl Avery write a letter to her mother telling her they're heading out of town for a while and not to worry, which is so disgusting. And, like, I don't know if he had other people write letters or if she was, like, especially close to her mom. And so they were like, hey, you know, we don't need people looking for us in the woods. Like, make sure she knows.
Yeah.
And
cover
then
their own asses. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So then Jeff, Ron Luff, Damon, who's 18 at this point, so Jeff's oldest son, Damon, Richard Brand, Danny Kraft, and Greg all go to the barn to prepare for the murders.
And that, they still don't know who it is yet, right?
At this point,
I mean, everyone
these men
probably
do,
knows.
But everyone mostly knows, but there's still that, yeah.
It hasn't been, like, announced.
Yeah. So Ron comes into the house and tells Dennis Avery that Jeff needs him in the barn to look over some of their gear. And in the show, Deb mentions, she was like, I knew at this point that this was it. It was happening now, and it was the Averys. And later on, she'll talk about how she's like, I did nothing to stop this. So they go to the barn, and as soon as Dennis steps through the door, he's taken down by these men. You know, he's a scrawnier guy. 5 men taking him down, it doesn't take long. And then his hands, his feet, and his mouth and eyes were duct taped. And Jeff shot him twice in the chest. And then he's dumped into the pit. And then Ron goes back for Cheryl Avery. And he's like, hey, Jeff needs to talk to you. And as they step into the barn, she can't see the pit. So she doesn't know Dennis is there. And, like, while they were shooting Dennis, one of the men was running a chainsaw to help cover up the noise of the gunshots. So they couldn't hear that inside.
Okay. Well, that's not what I thought you were going to say. So I'm glad that there wasn't something else being done with the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah.
But,
no.
Okay.
No,
yeah. Yeah, I was like, wait, what was he doing with the chainsaw down there? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
No. No one's being cut up. So they tell Cheryl, hey, we need to duct tape your hands, your feet, and your eyes. And she's so used to being told what to do and listening to men that she complies. And they place her in the pit next to her husband. And so she doesn't realize she's laying next to her dead husband.
Oh,
and Jeff proceeds to shoot her. Mm-hmm. Oh. And so Jeff used different guns. It sounds like maybe on all of them, because he had all this stockpile and he wanted to get practice in for the apocalypse. So he knew how to shoot them.
Gross. Disgusting.
And so you see Ron in the Colts episode being interviewed by police and him talking about what they did and how they did it. And he talks about how after that he goes in for then the oldest girl, Trina, who was 15. And he's like, listen, the kids don't need to know what's about to happen to them. Like, let's make it into a game. And so Trina was 15. Rebecca, you know, she's killed. It sounds like they're killed pretty much almost instantly from behind when they're brought in.
Good, because there's, oof. I mean, not good, Rebecca, but good that it was quick.
But I mean, yeah. Rebecca was 13, and then Karen was the youngest, and I've heard varying ages, like, even in the Colts podcast, like, in the first episode, they say one age, and then in the second episode, they say another age, so she was 6 or 7. Ron actually carried her, like, gave her a piggyback ride to the barn and to her death. Yeah.
Gross.
It's so gross.
It's disgusting. So
after the Avery family has been killed and their bodies are in the pit, Jeff tells the men to cover their body with lime so that they decompose faster. And then they throw rocks over the body, and then they fill the hole back in. And then they cover that spot with trash to hide the area. Now, by pure coincidence, the next day, local police and the FBI go to the farmhouse to interview everyone. Because they're trying to get enough evidence to maybe arrest Jeffrey, because they still think that this whole conspiracy to take over the temple is going on. They know nothing about the sacrifices because the two former cult members they've talked to weren't there to hear about the sacrifice. So they don't know anything about that. So no one in the cult says anything, and the FBI, the police go away empty-handed. Like, they have no reasoning to search the area. They have nothing. And Jeff takes this as a sign that he can get away with anything.
Yeah.
That night, the cult leaves town. So that night, the cult leaves town. They end up in the wilderness in West Virginia in some sort of, like, public camping ground there. And there was some other, like, bullshit that happened there that was just, like, more marriages. Then Jeff gets into the point of, like, taking second wives and stuff like cult members do. Like, he took Tracy Patrick at first and then decided he didn't want her. And then it was Kathy, who was Keith Johnson's wife.
Just does what he wants. Takes what he wants when he wants it.
It was a lot. And at this point, And at this point, a lot of the cult members are like, what the fuck did we just do?
Like, that was a pretty big deal.
Yes. You know, they're still there, though, and then Jeff kind of starts to realize, because then, like, the Kirtland police are calling the West Virginia. They find out that they're there and stuff. Like, can you at least fly by, you know, figure what's out going on over there? They stopped in there. So Jeff sends his wife, Alice, back to her parents with their three young kids, which also he's trying to get her out of the way because he just wants Kathy now. And, like, him and Alice had publicly fought about him taking Kathy as a second wife. And so even though she's pissed at this and she still supports him too and tells everyone to listen to him, and I don't know. So Jeff then realizes, like, they can't stay in the West Virginia wilderness and survive over winter. So they head back to Ohio, and they rent a different farmhouse. Now they're staying in a different, like, barn or something like that, but it's not the same one that the Averys are in. And Jeff is like, you know what? Kathy and I are actually going to take off and we'll come back and see you all in spring. And his followers are like, what the fuck? You're supposed to be our prophet and, like, leading us, and you're going to abandon us, because they had no food. It was cold. And, like,
was anybody even working? I mean, like, making money? Okay. So how were they even surviving? You know, like,
that's just it. Like, they had to scrape together money just to make it back to Ohio. So Richard and Greg leave on, like, October 31st of 89, and then Debbie follows soon after. And then finally on December 31st of 1989, Keith contacts the ATF, which is Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Agency. He tells them about the bodies at the barn, and ATF doesn't believe this, but they relay the information to the Kirtland police, being like, hey, can you go check this out and just prove it's not real? So they go and they just find a bunch of trash there. So they have to get a warrant to, like, actually search the place.
Go through it.
Even though it's abandoned. I don't get how that all works, but someone has to own it. I don't know. So January 3rd, they finally get the warrant. So this is January 3rd of 1990. Mind you, the Averys were killed April of 1989. So it's been like 9 months. They get there at, like, 9 in the morning, and firemen and everything, like, they have all this, they have to take shifts cleaning, so they clean out all this garbage, and then they notice this square of dirt that looks like it's clearly been moved recently. So they, when they start to dig, like, they can smell the decomposition, and that's when they find the 5 bodies. And it takes them a little bit to figure out who these people are, because no one knew the Averys were missing. They thought they had taken off with the cults.
And it's been long enough now that you can't identify them, so.
Well, and because they put the lime over them, it decomposed their bodies a little bit more, too. So Richard and Greg are the first ones to turn themselves in, but soon after, everyone in the cult except for the Lundgrens like follow suit and turn themselves in. And it's not really long. They, I think, arrest Alice and Damon in Missouri, and I don't remember, Jeff might have been coming back there then too.
Mm-hmm.
So Debbie took a plea deal where she agreed to testify against Alice, Jeff, and Ron Luff, and she received 7 to 25 years on 5 counts of conspiracy to commit murder, and she served 21 years.
Okay.
Keith Johnson was given immunity for informing, plus they kind of later, so Kathy Johnson and the Patricks were determined to not have known anything, mm-hmm. and they were just given 1 year for obstruction of justice. Danny Kraft was sentenced to 50 years to life. Ron Luff, Alice, and Damon all received life sentences. Nice. Richard and Greg got 15 to life. Susan Luff got 7 to 25 years as well. And then there were a few other, like, that they didn't really name. Like, some other cult members just got, like, they served about 20 years in prison, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Debbie's out now. She served 21, like I said. But Jeff got a death sentence, and then he was executed by the state of Ohio on October 24th, 2006. And that is the real devil in Ohio.
Wow. I'm surprised as many of them got charged and everything with what they did. Like, I figured a mm-hmm. ton of them would just get off pretty clean. Wow.
Yeah.
That is significantly different than the show. Which the show its own plot, you know. I mean, clearly they have,
like I said, it was like loosely based. Like, I hadn't ever really realized that there was like a cult in Ohio. So right. I was like, well, this is interesting. And it was like, well, weird coincidence, felt like a sign. I was like, okay, this is popping up, this is my Ohio is my state.
Yeah. So that's a pretty crazy one. And that's, I mean, yeah, it's not really like the show much at all. So I'm glad that you shared that because I knew it was very like loosely based. So
yeah,
but some things you can just see in the sense of like how they can brainwash people. I think a lot of that, it's like the same common personality type and
yeah,
you know, different triggers that, yeah, bring back certain memories that cause people to do things they do. So
yeah. And then the show, Debbie talks about how she has this dream where she was out in a barn and a rainstorm was coming in, so she was running back to the house and a small hand grabbed her and she looked down and it was Karen and she said, why didn't you save me, why didn't you do anything? And she's like, and I didn't. She goes, I didn't. She's like, I could have done something and I didn't, and I have to live with that.
That's a terrible and so sad. It's like sad regardless, but then when there's like innocent children involved and stuff too, it just makes it that much worse.
And I'm not saying like Dennis and Cheryl deserve to die by any means, but their daughters didn't choose to be part of that cult. Right. They did, you know. And right. I feel like at that point, if you know he's talking about killing children, it's like, why are you
there? And knowing that he doesn't like you anyway, well, I mean, you would think that they know that.
I mean,
and they had to know that when there was going to be a sacrifice and they're the only family that was like not a part of the things.
It's just amazing to me how many people, he was like, some of you are going to die. I'm going to kill some of you. And they were just like,
was that my phone? Oh my gosh, I literally didn't even do anything. It was locked and I unlocked the screen. I'm so sorry.
That's fine.
I don't know if you need to take that out or not, but that was creepy. I still don't know what that was. I'm looking at my phone and nothing.
Also, that's kind of creepy. Yesterday, one of my clients at work, her phone out of nowhere was like, your destination's on the left.
Well, sometimes my watch will think I'm asking it for something and it'll say, I'm sorry, I did not understand you. And I'm like, what? And I look down in my whole like paragraph I had just said this on there. So I apologize. That was really weird. Good. And I thought it was coming from your computer and I was like looking down. Okay.
No, that was totally you.
Mm-hmm. That was eerie. Okay.
But no, so anyways, like I was saying, it's so interesting to me. Like that the people were just like, I could be murdered by this man, but I'm gonna stay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine the kind of mindset you have to be in or how much you had to have been broken down to know that you could die
and you still stay. And having a family of your own. And like, I mean, that's your job as a parent, is like to protect your children. So that's really sad too.
It was an interesting case. And like I said, the cults episode had gave way more details.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they're each like hour long episodes and stuff.
Was that the podcast one?
That's the podcast. Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's two parters, like I said, and there's just so much information.
Oh yeah. Sometimes it's overwhelming researching cases when you see how much there is to it. It's like, okay, we could really make these like 2 weekers, you know, but it's a lot.
Yeah. So it was an interesting one. So yeah, you guys, that's Ohio.
Well, thanks for doing all the research and that creepiness.
Yeah.
And for sharing it with us. It's like ready for spooky season. Not that any of our stories are not spooky in their own way, but now it's like, okay.
Well, and really being there. I was looking at like creepy, spooky stuff because, you know, I love that jam. But then I found a couple things. I was like, okay, but maybe. But I was like, okay, this one like just felt right. I was like, all right, we've only ever done one cult.
Yeah. And that's interesting.
Those are, the mindset of the people who follow, it's always fascinating, and I can't imagine what it would be like to get pulled into that point and stuff, but
so creepy.
Yeah, so you guys also remember, if you can rate and review wherever you listen, if it's something that's doable, we greatly appreciate it. We're trying to work on that, you know. We want to be able to do things. We want to be able to do like giveaways and stuff. And
yeah, we have some exciting ideas we've been brainstorming that we would love to share with you at some point. So we got to get to a good spot to do that stuff. So
I know we're working on trying to grow this, you guys. And so rating and reviewing, really, it helps us so much. Telling your friends and family that you think might like it, I mean, goes such a long way. We really do want to bring you the best quality content that we can. And, you know, we do our best. We're not perfect. We're human, but we're doing what we can. And you know, again, too, if you want to share any of your own stories, whether it's true crime, paranormal, strange, whatever, email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to be able to do like a listener story episode. You know, just stuff like that. Plus, we just love to hear from you guys. It really does mean so much to us. We love to hear your thoughts and your opinions, what you guys think of the show. If you have constructive but nice criticism, like, be nice about it. But so you know, you can follow us on all the social medias, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, just Instagram. Search.
You see our logo? That's us.
Yeah. We'll it's always linked in the show notes too, which is in the bottom end of the description. So,
and also for people who don't know how to rate and review, it's easy. If you just scroll down while you're listening to it, there's generally a spot, there's a picture, there's stars, you just click the five.
I think on Spotify it's literally just clicking a star. I don't even know.
Oh, is
if
it?
It's like,
okay, I guess I don't even know. I primarily listen on
Apple, but same. I know there are other areas. But until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland weary.